Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Yeah, what that guy said. Well, howdy! God, I'm finally back behind the microphone. I planned to be back behind the microphone. I'm Bob, by the way, for those of you who don't know. And if you don't know and you're just happening upon the program, well, by golly, you're welcome here. Welcome to Conversation Radio. Welcome to radio unlike anything going on anywhere else in the U.S. Seriously. No, I'm back. It's been a while. Or it feels like it's been forever. Shoot, I feel like I've been halfway across the globe since last we talked, which, by the time you add up the miles, I have been! You remember those old commercials for Delta Airlines? What was the slogan? Delta. We're ready when you are. Liars. So, if you recall last Friday night, Friday on the front porch, I was blathering along about how I was going to be getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, getting ready and going, catching my flight, and I was going to go to Utah to talk about mountaintop removal with some folks out there. That was the plan. So, I don't know if you're like me, but when I travel, and I've gotten worse about this as the years have gone on. But when I travel, I don't sleep well. I sort of sleep with one eye open, sort of half-cocked, scared to death that I'll oversleep, screw up, and miss my flight. Well, it was no different Friday night into Saturday morning. So, bleary-eyed and half-creepy, I got up and stumbled in here at about 5 o'clock Saturday morning, Eastern Time. And by the way, my throat's still a little rough for wear from whatever bug had hold of me when I got home, so just bear with me, please. I got up, got in here, and sat down, check email before I leave. I'm sorry. This is an internet-based show, and we get mail about the show literally 24 hours a day. Sometimes people call at 3 o'clock in the morning thinking the show is live and they want to talk. And you know what? I talk to them. Because it's conversation radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week when you get right down to it. But anyway, I get in here, I check email, I make sure nothing's blowing up. Check the stream to make sure that it was still streaming happily along. And the phone rings, which, as I've noted, is not surprising for this joint. It rings at 3 and 5 in the morning all the time. And so I pick it up, and no, it's not somebody calling to talk about the show or wanting to get a point across or remind me. No, it's Delta We're Ready When You Are Airlines, who it turns out weren't ready when I was. Here's the skinny. They called to tell me that my plans have changed. Well, no, my plans hadn't changed. They had changed my plans. A little smidgen of difference there when you get right down to it. And they had changed sufficiently to wreck the whole damn day. Now, here's how it shook out. I was supposed to get aboard a little Delta crop duster in Charleston, West Virginia, that was due to leave said Charleston, West Virginia at 8:30 in the morning and arrive about an hour later in Atlanta. Only it wasn't gonna. Instead, I was going to get aboard my flight at 9:34 and get to Atlanta just in time to miss my flight to Salt Lake City. Nice, huh? Well, okay, no big deal. I mean, it's Atlanta. It's the busiest airport damn near on the planet. There's bound to be one more flight leaving Atlanta for Salt Lake City an hour or two later. No. No. Not. No, not. So Delta, who wasn't ready when I was, had rescheduled me on the most convenient available schedule of flights. Want to know what that meant? That meant that Bob flew at 9:34 to Atlanta, Georgia, where a couple of hours later he boarded a plane for New York City and JFK International Airport, where he would then wait for 4 hours and then board a plane from JFK to Salt Lake City. What had been planned to be about 6.5 hours in the air turned into an 18-hour odyssey of airline misery. Yeah. So I got aboard my plane in Atlanta, which turned out to be a Boeing 767, which turned out to be a 6767 because it was actually bound for Ghana, you know, in Africa. But they conveniently stopped it in JFK just long enough to drop off the hillbilly. What a ride. Decent flight, nicely flown, comfortable. But what a ride. So then I land in New York. 4 hours at JFK. And I don't mean to offend the New Yorkers in the audience. And I know that everybody on earth bitches about Atlanta's Hartsfield International Airport. I will take Hartsfield any day of the week over JFK. You can get to everything in Hartsfield. You go down, you get on the little train, you're there, you go to your gate. Nothing's a great big running dead sprint or anything. JFK. Madness. Pure madness. And hung out for 4 hours waiting for my flight to Salt Lake City. One thing, excuse me, not quite over it yet. One thing I noticed is that the air conditioning apparently doesn't work at JFK. There wasn't a person in that airport who wasn't sweating like a pig, Bob included. So then, I get on the plane and fly across the country to Salt Lake City. And you know what? Really, where air travel is concerned, I can't overemphasize this fact. When you, with the way it is with the airlines and how they cram every bit of humanity into every given flight so that every flight on Earth is bulging like a sardine can that's gone bad. Having a good fellow sardine crammed in next to you really is the key to pleasant air travel, or something approaching it. And I was very lucky. on every flight but one, I had a pleasant traveling companion next to me in the sardine can. From a construction guy from California to a purveyor of canned goods from Portland to a director of nursing from a West Virginia hospital. Great traveling companions. The guy from Portland with whom I flew back from Salt Lake City to Cincinnati was an absolute joy. The in-flight movie was this miserable, god-awful piece of dreck called Dear John. The last time I watched anything called Dear John, I think it was an NBC series that featured Judd Hirsch or something, and had a jingle that went, Dear John. Well, not this. Oh, no. About 10 minutes into this thing, I'm thinking, oh, my God, this thing's just like that god-awful piece of garbage Agnes made me watch called The Notebook. So fast forward to yesterday, and I see an ad on TV for out now on DVD and Blu-ray, Dear John, from the same person who created The Notebook. And I just slapped myself in the head and said, this thing, oh, this movie was awful. Just terrible. It was about this guy who was in special forces who met this girl on a beach, and this is spring of 2001, and then the planes hit the towers, and they were going to be together forever, him and the blonde on the beach, but he re-upped and promised he would write her everything about everywhere he was, and then she quit writing because she, come on, name of the movie, Dear John'd him. Because she had to move on with her life, and she wanted to spend her life riding horses with autistic children. Bad, bad movie. Bad. And so my fellow sardine next to me on the airliner and I are just passing glances at each other at these. Shoot him! Shoot him! It's the only time I've ever rooted for the Iraqis. Shoot him! You do not have to take him home and shoot him later. You can shoot him now! Shoot him! Get the movie over! Airline travel does crazy things to people who are already not disposed to being on airlines. Shoot him! And this from a peacenik. But this is a peacenik who has no patience for bad filmmaking, especially when the audience is trapped. I couldn't dial away. I didn't have one of those screens where... No! I had to watch it. There was no ignoring it. Shoot him! But fortunately, my fellow sardine, at the end of it, looks at me and goes, dude, it is going to take 3 solid hours of SportsCenter to get me over that one. And that's all it took. The conversation opened up, and we had a delightful trip for the rest of the way into Cincinnati. Other conversations along the way were great, too. And I found out something. This is hilarious. Now this wasn't... That flight on that 737 was not... It had the drop-down screens in front of you, one screen for like every 3 rows of seats. But the one I had from New York City, the 737 I had from New York City to Salt Lake City, it had these little screens right in front of you where you could cycle through, listen to music, watch some TV, some CNN, whatever. It was really, that part of it was cool. And so they also have this thing where you can view your flight in progress on an animated screen that gives you your current ground speed, that gives you your time in flight, your time to destination, whether you've got a headwind or a tailwind and how fast that is. And there's a map. There's a map with an overlay of a little animated airplane. going across the country. And when the plane turns, the little plane icon turns, and you see you're flying. And you really learn the meaning of flyover country, because we didn't fly over any significantly inhabited areas. I guess that's planning on the part of the FAA and the controllers and stuff, so that, you know, if the thing happens to go down in a 40,000-foot drop of screaming and hurtling and flames and all of that, that you don't really hit anything important, like a house. You just hit somebody's ground. But as the plane flew across, I noticed that every state on the map was labeled. I mean, Alabama was there, it was labeled Alabama. Virginia was there, it was labeled Virginia. New York was there, it was labeled New York. Tennessee, Indiana, Illinois, North Dakota, South Dakota, Colorado, Wyoming, Utah. There was only one state on that whole map of the Continental 48 that didn't have a name. Come on. You know where this program originates. That's right. The only state on the map that did not have a name was West Virginia. Just in case no one would ever believe me when I said that, I actually whipped out my telephone, secretly turned it on so that I wouldn't be thrown off the plane mid-flight or handed over to TSA or sent to Guantanamo when it landed. I surreptitiously turned my cell phone on and took a picture of the interactive map that showed that West Virginia doesn't even have a name. Of course, I guess if they were into telling truth, they would have just put resource colony, or maybe clean coal, or here be dragons, or here be no more mountains. But no, it was just nothing. There was a little border around it. I mean, it was clearly a state, borders on all sides, just no name. They couldn't even put West Virginia out in the Atlantic Ocean and draw a line to us like they do with, like, Rhode Island and Connecticut and Delaware and stuff, because those are smaller states than we are. No. No name. Of course, in orange across the whole thing, it said Appalachian Mountains. Here be coal. Huh. So, that was a little screwy. But anyway, so, and the only bad part of the trip was the flight from Atlanta to JFK that I spent next to someone who apparently had not bathed in several weeks. No Betsy, no WV, no WVA, nothing. I guess I'm going to have to haul the card out of the phone and upload it. Of course, Delta was headquartered and founded in Atlanta, Georgia. And the old Confederacy is still a little bit pissy that we got carved out of the old Dominion. It's hard to get Southerners to acknowledge the existence of West Virginia. As I've mentioned before, growing up in Alabama, every time my family, you know, when the rest of the world was going to the beach or Six Flags or somewhere fun, my family was coming back up here to see the extended family, which I now cherish but once upon a time dreaded. Sorry, working on a technical detail here. There, that's easy. Anyway. Yeah, there's Cossack. Recovering from heart surgery, by the way. How's that for a dedicated horn chatter? Glad you're back up and running and feeling better, Koss. Well, I've been through the state that ain't got no name. It felt good to be at... See what it's like when you see what it's like when you're part of the Horn family. Everybody plays. It's just like Little League. Everybody plays. Anyway, but the guy hadn't bathed for a long, long time, and a little ripe. So that was kind of icky. But, one of the things that bummed me out was I was supposed to be in Utah until Delta wasn't ready when I was. I was supposed to be in Utah at about 2 o'clock Mountain Time and never having been to Utah. And, in fact, yes, I'm a hillbilly. I'm not that well-traveled. That was as far. That was the furthest west I had ever been. Until then, Oklahoma City owned that honor. Later this summer, Las Vegas will own that honor. I'm slowly working my way toward the Pacific coast. It's only taken 47 years. So anyway, one of the pissers was that I was supposed to get to Salt Lake City at like 2 in the afternoon. And then I had about a 45-minute ride up to the resort where we were going to be doing speaking. We, like I'm the Queen of England. No, I was on a panel. There were several people that were going to be doing the speaking. I want to tell you about that later. But no, instead, I arrive in Salt Lake City at 11 o'clock at night, mountain time, which to me is 1 a.m., which means I've been up for 20 continuous hours and am not a well man. What? Just point me to the door. So I got a nice shuttle ride up to the Snowbird Resort with a great driver named Chuck, who was just a joy to talk to all the way, told me everything I ever wanted to know about Salt Lake City and that part of the world. Got there. Oh, what a beautiful place. Got checked in. And yes, hillbilly me thinks he lives in the mountains. And I do. I just live in the mountains. I live in mountains that are millions and millions and millions and millions and hundreds of millions of years older than the Rockies. Just are. Once upon a time. See, that's one of the reasons you can get so worked up and attached to these Appalachians. Is that you know that you are in the presence of something that is older than most anything you will ever come in contact with. Anything. Because back when the Rocky Mountains were Iowa, or back when Utah was underwater, more precisely, well, the Appalachians were bigger than the Himalayas, really. And it's taken all those hundreds of millions of years to reduce these mountains and make them small enough for thugs like Don Blankenship to be able to get after coal from the top of them. And so I arrived at night, and I really didn't get a real sense for what I was looking at until we turned to go up the canyon, which I suppose is a Western word for holler. I like holler. But I guess it doesn't quite mark it as well as canyon. But even then, in the light of what was apparently a close to full moon, I could see that I was surrounded by giants. Massifs. You know, M-A-S-S-I-F. Yes, massifs. And it was stunning in the moonlight. It was amazing. And then Chuck told me, I said, well, what kind of altitude are we above mean sea level? He said, well, down there in Salt Lake City, it's 5,000 feet. It's not so bad. He said, you ever been at 5,000 feet before? I said, not unless I was in an airplane. He said, 5,000 feet can be a challenge. He said, not to scare you or anything, but be a little careful when we get to where we're going, because the lodge you're staying in is at 8,000 feet. And there is definitely a difference. Wasn't kidding. So, as it turned out, I finally got checked in at about 11:30 Mountain Time, 1:30 mine. Wandered around, met some folks from met some folks from the River Rally that I was speaking at. Met some fascinating people. Got myself unwound and close enough to sane to get to bed. And got up the next morning at my normal time, which was actually 6 a.m., but was actually 8 a.m. there. A little the worse for wear, but I'm okay. Left the room, walked down the hall, got on the elevator, walked another way across the resort to go to breakfast, and found myself completely out of breath and sweating like a pig. No cigarettes, no nothing. Couldn't breathe. Weren't my fault. Weren't no oxygen. Because other people were doing the same thing. That altitude, that's fun. But anyway, I looked out the window, and I looked out I looked out at what was around me, and then I was really blown away. Because there I was at 8,000 feet, staring at mountains in excess of 12,000 feet. And there was a geology guy nearby, and I said, "Hey, what kind of rock we got in these mountains?" He said, "Wasatch." And he was from Fayette County, too, oddly enough. A neighbor I didn't even know I had. He said, "Sandstone, just like our mountains." And that was like a slap in the face, just a pop on the forehead. And suddenly, with the appreciation of massive timescales, and I realized that absent the dinosaurs, I was time traveling. I had just traveled in time. I was looking at the Appalachians. I was looking at what they were a couple of hundred million years ago. Mighty and giant, stabbing the sky, covered in snow. It was snowing as I stood there. The next night, it snowed a foot more of powder on the 24th of May, 2010. But it may just as well have been the 24th of May, 100 million years ago. And I had an all-new appreciation for these mountains that I hold so dear. And a couple of hours later, we delivered our panel. And we told people about what mountaintop removal is doing to Appalachia. And there were people in the room who were shocked, stunned. And from what I heard later, I think their outlook was changed. At one point in time, I said, "Look, you've got to understand something." And it bears repeating here. Coal has its uses. But the idea that we live in the 21st century and we're still using an 18th century fossil fuel for electricity is just stupid. Just stupid. And it has to be said. I explained to them how the little streams that get buried by mountaintop removal are just like the capillaries in your body. And no matter how healthy your arteries and your veins are, when the capillaries get messed up, everything else follows suit sooner or later. and pretty soon, you're done. And in the course of that presentation, I had been invited out there by a great guy named Dennis Gann. He is the Cook Inlet keeper from Alaska. The Cook Inlet is down there by Anchorage. Kind of weird to say down there when you're talking about anything in Alaska. But yeah, it's southern, yeah. And it is fed by exquisite rivers meeting the sea. And I learned about another horrible, horrible plan from, of course, the Thugs of Coal. Apparently, and I didn't know this, and holy crap, what a wake-up call! While West Virginia has massive coal reserves that have been largely tapped out and won't last for another 20 or 30 years, and while there's a pretty large reserve out around the Powder River Basin that they're and up into Montana that they're actively toxifying the land with there, and while there are some coal reserves in Arizona that have been exploited. To the eternal detriment of the native Hopi and Diné people of Black Mesa. And while our dear friend Jeff Biggers has told us about the wholesale rape of Illinois' Little Egypt region in his masterwork, Reckoning at Eagle Creek, The Secret Legacy of Coal in the Heartland, holy crap! Some of the largest coal reserves in America are in Alaska. And we thought we only had to protect Alaska from the oil predators. Wrong. They've got coal. And they have found a reserve of coal, some 5,000 acres of it. Just a part. That's just a part of it. There's acres upon acres upon acres. Down in the lowland marshy wetlands region along the Chwitna River, if I'm saying it right, C-H-U-I-T-N-A, for all I'm able to pronounce things, that's probably pronounced Ohio. But the Chwitna River. Or maybe you don't pronounce the W, just Chitna. Maybe it's just the Chitna River. But whatever you want to call it, the Chitna is an exquisite salmon breeding ground that provides tremendous support for the people around it. And this coal company called Pac Rim Coal, wants to rape it. And the coal they want to come pull out of there is something called bituminous class C, which means it's really soggy and wet and nasty, and it's almost lignite, practically little more than mud. Carboniferous mud. And they want to mine it. And they're asking for the right to mine it. To strip mine it, baby, because you can't deep mine a river. And their plan for mining that reserve, this Pac Rim Coal, calls for the elimination and rebuilding of about 17 miles of the Chitna River. 17 miles of all manner of salmon and trout breeding stream. 17 miles. That, as we know, because we know that when you're talking about coal companies and reclamation, we got to remember that the first two words in reclamation are wreck and lame. They plan to rebuild it and divert it from its current course by building a big ditch. But there's only one problem. The big ditch is a sterile thing. And in fact, because of the nature of the hydrology around there, there are things, gases and air and whatnot that bubble up through the bottom of the stream bed that interact critically with the salmon eggs and cause them to be coated in such a way that they can then hatch a year later. Sorry, won't happen once Pack Rim Coal is done. Plus, coal isn't a water-intensive process, but because they're already doing it in marshland, there's nowhere for them to take the water, so it just has to go back into the river. For the rest of the Chittenah River, goodbye. Bye, salmon. Sorry, you've been here millions of years. We're going to screw you now. Sorry, native peoples. That fish you've been living on for 20,000 years? F you, buddy. Tourism, fishing industry in Alaska, screw you too. Because there's a little bit of coal, not a lot, but a little bit, and we're going to put it on barges and we're going to send it to effing China. Pack Rim Coal. Now back up. Now back up. I mentioned that the resort we were staying at was Snowbird, and it is beautiful. Nestled in those mountains, it is a little slice of paradise. But it's also well worth remembering that Utah has been tortured for coal too. Need I remind anyone of Bob Murray, an evil bastard, very, very nearly as evil as Don Blankenship, who brought us the Crandall Canyon disaster and screamed at members of the for-profit media when they dared ask him why those miners had to die. Utah has been tortured for coal for a lot of years. And there's a lot of Utah that's wrecked from it. And one of the places that was wrecked from mining, if not coal, then other things, was the area up the canyon, or holler, where sits Snowbird. And the guy who owns it, a millionaire, perhaps billionaire. Dick Bass is, I think, his name. Has worked tirelessly to clean up the area. Cleaning up mine tailings and fixing habitat. And doing his best to make it a nice place for people to come to. It's one of the more challenging ski areas. The hardcores told me that, well, you know, the novices and the tourists, they go to Park City. There's discos and stuff and ice cream stands and stuff like that. The people who really want to ski, they come to Snowbird. Well, guess what? That visionary man who did all that cleanup work, all that work to restore the natural beauty of his tourist heaven at Snowbird. Remember the coal company I mentioned that wants to mine the Chittenah River? He owns half of that company. He owns half of that company. And he will not respond to any of the Alaskans who simply want to know why. But by God, when you walk into Snowbird, there's a great big wooden panel on the wall talking about how Snowbird cares about the environment. And I suspect that that's part of the reason they were chosen as the site of this river rally. Snowbird has an excellent environmental record. They recycle, they cleaned up the land. But the owner has a dirty, dirty, nasty, filthy little secret. Because everything that he has done in Utah will be completely negated by what he plans to do to the people and the communities and the land in Alaska. And so, on Monday, 2 days ago, I went back down the mountain after it had snowed a foot. The roads were a mess. It was an adventure. And got on a plane in Salt Lake City, flew to Cincinnati, had a great conversation with a guy from Portland who was really cool. And all I know is his first name. I'd love to drop him an email, but, you know, what the hell. Then got on a plane in Cincinnati, flew 35 minutes to Charleston, flew over a couple of mountaintop removal sites, knew that I was back home. Tears in my eyes looking out the window. Got home dog-ass tired, 11 o'clock Monday night. Woke up Tuesday morning sick as a dog. Fever, the sweats. Now, I'm still not over it, but I will be. And so I knocked off last night and had another rerun on. I apologize for that. But in a way. A little bit of downtime after a long trip like that is good, too, because it is exhausting. And for anybody who travels for a living and gets on planes a lot, you have my undying respect and sympathy, because I couldn't do it. Just couldn't do it. Delta, you know, once they get in the air, they do a great job. The flights were perfect. It's the stuff on the front end where they have problems. Because, and this all isn't just the story of Bob's travels, you learn, if you've got your eyes open when you travel, and I'm sure most of you do, you learn things. Because on Saturday morning, when we were headed down to the mountain to Charleston to get on the aircraft, we stopped one place to try to put gas in the truck. And, well, we can't sell you anything. Lightning struck, took out everything. So we had to wait to get gas. Got gas somewhere else. And I'm thinking, okay, well, we've had some rainy weather and some lightning through here. Maybe bad weather delayed the flight. Airlines cannot control the weather, and I was ready to forgive that. So although I was flustered and I knew my day was screwed, I just took it as given that, you know, something natural had occurred to keep the flight from happening. Because I suppose I'm a silly little optimist even at my advanced age. My nature is to always assume that people don't just deliberately screw up. Guess what? Wrong again. It turns out that Delta, because it is a non-union shop, because Delta despises unions like God hates sin, or the devil hates saints, more appropriately, well, you know, if you fly the Charleston to Atlanta run, that's what you fly. Charleston to Atlanta, Atlanta to Charleston, Charleston to Atlanta, Atlanta to Charleston. That's your life. Turns out that apparently Delta had been driving their pilot on the Charleston to Atlanta run like a borrowed mule. And just as it is, any of our over-the-road truckers can tell you, there are rules. You can only drive for so long before you got a guarantee, you've got a promise, you've had some rest. And the same applies to pilots, and maybe more so. And Delta had driven its poor pilot that made that Charleston to Atlanta, Atlanta to Charleston to Atlanta, Atlanta to Charleston run so hard that they had to give him an extra hour's sleep and delay the flight by an hour so he would be safe to fly. That's why I said that whole advertising slogan about Delta is ready when you are. No, they're not. Because they drive their people like draft animals. Just sad. So that's my little adventure. And we will have a normal broadcast week this week and next week. Just a reminder on June 7th, 8th, and 9th. I'll be in D.C. for the America's Future Now conference. So that's the next weird interruption in schedule that is coming. We have a ton to talk about tonight. I have stories within stories within stories. It is, after all, prayer meeting. And I've got some real woohoo religion industry stories. And we will get to them. I promise. That's the plan, at least. Your phone calls are, of course, integral to the entire show itself. You know how to reach the program, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel. It's 304-658-3333. Email rolls in easily to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. We'll take a little break and come back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I have been to the mountain. Keep it.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is a public service announcement. We'll get some.
There's a new type of music program coming to the horn.
We got a letter from the government the other day. Opened it and read it. It said they were suckers.
They wanted me about a summer or whatever. Picture me buying the scam. I said never. But I don't need the battle call.
Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
Keep me down K Street.
The People's Mixtape.
Johnny's dead and Mitch is gone and Kelly have to live. Is that on the list? And then goes on and on. Go
coming soon to the Head On Radio Network.
No power now.
Cut your flag, the gal won't get you into heaven anymore.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, so I hit the hour two intro 5 minutes early. So what? That's five more minutes to talk if I don't run another intro. Hey, a little something. This is just a little silly little idea I had. Because coming home from Nashville last week, I was presented with my very own quart container of Nancy's yogurt, and I am in love. L-U-B, love, with Nancy's yogurt. Oh, my God, this stuff is wonderful. Oh, I could cry. No high fructose corn sweetener. No guar gum. No locust bean gum. Just creamy, wonderful, fall in love goodness. And so, well, I didn't, you know, maybe if you haven't figured it out yet, we operate by a different set of principles here at the Horn. Of course, you wouldn't be here if you didn't already know that. Things are not, you know, we don't work very well with the for-profit medium. As I've said 1,000 times over, and I'll say it again 1,000 times more, you know, I'm the kind of geeky guy that when he finds something, well, like, I found a hot sauce I fell in love with. And no, it's not Crystal. But I called the consumer hotline on the back of the bottle, and you know, the only people who ever call, because I was told this, the only people who ever call the consumer hotline are people who want to gripe. And all I wanted to do was call and thank them for putting out a great product that I could feel good about buying. And I think I almost brought the woman on the other end of the line to tears just because I was being nice to her. So anyway, I got David from Tennessee kindly presented me with a quart of Nancy's yogurt. Even living near Nashville as he does, he has to go out of his way to get it, but it's so good that he does. And I got into it this morning. It was plain yogurt. It wasn't sweetened. But I just happened to have a bottle of organic blue agave syrup on hand. Many of you can probably guess why that was here in the first place. It wasn't for yogurt. And I sweetened it with a little blue agave syrup. And then, as David had done, sliced in some mango. Crumbled in a few raisins and let it sit for a little while till the raisins plumped. A little organic granola. Rolled that in, too, until the oats got plump. If I had that for breakfast every day for the rest of my life, or some near variation on it, that would be a big checkmark box on Bob's happy life. Just a happy way to start the day. A little bit later, I left it plain, and had it with had a couple of andouille sausages, and just dipped it in the andouille, and whoa, man, good. And so I got to I'd mentioned Nancy's on the air a couple of weeks ago, and I just started wandering around the website, and there's just nothing not to. They've got an 85 kilowatt solar array at their factory in Eugene, Oregon. They do a lot of stuff right. And because I believe in praising people who do things right, because I think that kind of goes hand in hand with the whole essence of being grassroots and real as opposed to corporate and commercial, I ran over to my Facebook account, and I looked up Nancy's Yogurt, and sure enough, there they were. And so I hit the like button. And here's where you come in. Consider, with that solar array, Nancy's Yogurt has gone a long way toward making sure that they are not participating in any way, shape, form, or fashion in blowing up my home. Because, see, even if you live on the West Coast or in the Northwest or wherever, and you think, well, hell, I'm not burning any mountaintop removal coal. I'm safe. Wrong. Because, see, a lot of this coal comes out of Appalachia, gets on a boat, goes to China, where they burn it to make steel and put it on the steel on a boat back to us, but they put their pollution into the air, and it floats back across the Pacific and lands on Washington, Oregon, California, you name it. We're all tied in, and we're all downstream, baby. But Nancy's Yogurt is making serious attempts at getting unplugged, because they do know that we're all downstream. So, like I said, here's where you come in. For those of you who Facebook, and I want to make abundantly clear that there no money's changed hands, there's no endorsement deal, nothing. Go to your Facebook account, if you Facebook. Look up Nancy's Yogurt and click the like button. Here's my goal. I want to see if we can get 200 horn listeners to click that like button. I checked the number of friends that they had before I started the show, after I had liked them. Then I posted a thing on my wall or whatever, asking folks to go and like Nancy's Yogurt. And I ask that after you've liked it, you come to that post, that wall post, and just respond and say you did. Because they had like 600 and some odd members, likers. If we can get 200, if we can get to 200 of that, if we can add 200 to that, we will be, Horn listeners will be 1/4 of all of their Facebook likes. And among other things, I will get a sense of how willing y'all are to do something that costs you absolutely nothing except for maybe 2 minutes of your time and your willingness to be supportive of a company that's doing it right and not wrong, and being supportive of a company that is untying itself from the horrors of coal. Now, my question is, can you do it? And most importantly, will you do it? And will you report back on my wall post when you have? I really sincerely hope to see 200 likes by the time we get back on the air tomorrow night. And I don't think I'm asking a lot of you. So can you do it? Will you do it? This is just about a do the right thing kind of thing. And frankly, if you live somewhere, and if you go to the Nancy's homepage, you can find out where your nearest purveyor of Nancy's is. Once you've tried the stuff, you'll know why I'm so over the moon about it. David from Tennessee warned me. He said, Bob, once you've tried this, Dannon will be dead to you. Yoplait will be dead to you. Anything but Nancy's will be wholly, utterly, and completely unacceptable to you. David in Tennessee, don't lie. It's that good. So can we do that? I don't know. Wait and see, I guess. It'll be interesting to find out. And, you know, I'll see as you guys post. And we'll check in on that Horn Audience Activist Radio inclination. In the chat room, Sparky's already telling me that he's done it. Thank you. Earlier on in my posting, Facebook friend Ron did it. No, wrong. Wrong. Looking at the wrong post. Yeah, here we go. Wow. Liz did it. Ellen did it. Richard did it. Kath did it. Betsy's done it. Our buddy David in South Carolina's done it. Brandon's done it. Marty's done it. Maura's done it. You guys are amazing. That's in 4 minutes. I think we can get this thing to 200. Susan, our news ninja Susan in Columbia City, Oregon, she's done it. This is really cool. So have a run at it just for fun. This is difference making. These are the little ways we make a difference. And along those lines, one of the things that encouraged me to do this comes from an email I received earlier today from our buddy Dennis in Kentucky. He sent me the latest Mark Morford column. Now, you know already that I think Mark Morford is, without a doubt, the single best broad-spectrum opinion columnist in America, bar none. I know he's that good because even the San Francisco Chronicle will not run him in print, no matter the fact that he's by far the most popular guy they've got. He's too edgy. Kind of like this program is too edgy for terrestrial censored FCC backridden radio. Today, Mark Morford wrote the following. In a column entitled, SPF 100 will melt your face off. There is no such thing as 1,000 thread count Egyptian cotton bedsheets. Did you already know? Were you already aware of this trifling yet entirely obnoxious little lie that is regularly foisted like Sarah Palin's insufferable wink on an unwary populace by a completely evil bedsheet manufacturing industry, drunk on power, black tar heroin, and the tears of Chinese sweatshop slave laborers? I bet you did. Indeed. It's an ongoing nefarious ruse that effortlessly dupes housewives and sorority girls by the millions as they browse Bed Bath & Beyond and Target and run their middle finger over the slippery pink sateen and coo about how if 500 thread count is yummy slippery like dime store baby oil, then 1,000 must be twice as Barbie-licious, right? Wrong. Of course, anything beyond 300 to 400 threads is complete BS, total fakery, often less soft or comfortable, wherein they cheat the verbiage by twisting multiple threads or adding extra layers or coating the threads with oil wrung from dead baby seals, just a guess, and forcing them into entirely useless weavings until all meaning is lost and no one cares anymore, and buying sheets is basically an insufferable crapshoot, and the industry goes, ha-ha, snicker. It's just one of those things. One of those everyday, widespread, consumer-oriented lies that have anchored themselves in the culture like some sort of contemptuous tumor. One of a million myriad obstacles you gotta navigate around, through, up, and over, just to make it through the day and try and sleep at night without slipping off the goddamn bed in a fit of, oh my God, why did I buy these stupid things? Oh, and beds? Mattresses? Those posh $5,000 ones with 4-inch pillow tops and gold-dipped European springs that have been individually licked by eunuch gnomes? Also a total lie. After about a grand for a great basic mattress, your body has no clue what it's riding on, and that includes Charlie Sheen and Stoya, just FYI. To that I will add, myself, this is me, not Mark, that includes the Swedish mattresses on which most of right-wing radio has made its career. You know, the ones that you can drop a bowling ball on and the mattress doesn't know it has a bowling ball on it. Yeah, that one. Made in Sweden with a foam originally developed by NASA. The NASA part never got... How's that supposed to make me think they're going to make a good bed? They haven't figured out a way to send an astronaut into space without making him soil himself. Just saying. Says Morford, on it goes. Recently I was at Walgreens perusing the candy-colored collection of hardcore chemicals known as consumer sunblocks. All those supposedly safe, healthy, body-protecting lotions, liquids, and sprays, nearly every one claiming something quite happily impossible. 100% waterproof. Total sunblock. Does not cause instant blindness in monkeys, we think. All of them so full of marketing gloss that you're meant to believe one shot of Bullfrog Super Waterproof Megasport Sun Preventer Extreme 2 lets you go traipsing completely naked through sub-Saharan Africa for a month, never suffering so much as a freckle. It's a crock. According to the nonprofit Environmental Working Group, upwards of 92% of sunblocks on the shelf are so full of misdirection and deception that you're better off skinny dipping in the Gulf of Mexico and draping yourself across the sun. Okay, maybe not that bad, but close. Did you read the Environmental Working Group's not very scientific but still pretty damning report that reveals how only a handful of sunblocks actually work reasonably well in protecting you from the seriously damaging stuff like broad-spectrum UV rays, melanoma, and most of Arizona and Texas? Go ahead. Douse yourself in Banana Boat SPF 75 Ultra Sport. That number means almost nothing. Isn't that reassuring? Somebody should tell the FDA about this. Oh, wait. Editorial comment by Bob. I am the pinkest man in America. We all know this. I sunburn under the refrigerator electric light bulb when it works. And for years, people have been saying, Bob, don't forget your sunblock. And I've been saying things like, I use the stuff, and even though I'm not good at mathematics, at least not on the fly, I know what it means to multiply with a zero. I know what the answer is. And hence, you know, you could dip me by the heel in SPF Avogadro's number, and I'm still getting burnt, baby. Back to Morford. What else you got? Food expiration dates? Lie. Ethanol? Lie. Clean coal? Lie. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for that. Clean coal? Lie. Coke Mini? Total bullshit. Lie. Bottled water? Massive, unconscionable lie. Still and forever. The Bible? Cute cluster bomb of childish oral tradition mythology told by angry, sexless white men and then translated from multiple dead languages and rewritten and re-edited countless times throughout history for the sake of power and political gain and to control the ignorant masses via guilt, shame, and fear. Oh, and also a lie. But, you know, a well-intentioned one. Sort of. Hey, thanks for the prayer meeting Wednesday contribution, Mark. So many lies, so many sighs. Quickly doth the question emerge. The hell do you do about it all? How do you parse and move and breathe? Just how abused and infuriated do you want to feel on a daily basis? Can you choose? As if the BP oil spill, the Tea Party, and the Texas State Board of Education weren't depressing enough, as if there aren't far too many large-scale events and sour prognostications whipsawing around the culture, nasty devolutions you have no real control over, but which nevertheless seem like a loaded gun aimed squarely at the quivering, asthmatic hunk of bunny lint that once was your sense of hope. Now you got to deal with the daily pronouncements about how some basic product or service you thought you didn't really have to think or worry about is actually yet another thing you have to think or worry about. Sure enough, it turns out they're trying to rob you blind and give you cancer and set your dog on fire. Ain't it always the way? How many times have we done stories on this program about things that have been contaminated with E. coli, which only happens when things are brought into contact with shit? That should never have come in contact with shit. Never. Lettuce? Peanut butter. There was an E. coli peanut butter thing. There was an E. coli green bean thing. Remember when all the green beans and canned green beans and peanut butter got recalled? Because it had had some poo mixed in? I've never seen a peanut poo, have you? Damn, that's a Dr. Seuss book. Anybody ever seen a green bean take a dump? Me neither. Back to Morford. How long can you hold out? How strong is your laughter? And how light your step? How much of the ongoing slasher flick nightmare of existence do you actually want to buy into as an actual slasher flick nightmare? And how much can you see as a sweet coming-of-age tearjerker about the little species that could? Because here's the thing. Once you get caught in the madhouse maze, everything begins to look evil and despicable. Every product and service, person and politician, movie star and homeless ranter appears to be a minion of the devil out to slash your tires and steal your popcorn. The good news is, it's not really true. The good news is, most of what we worry and stress about never actually comes to pass. me, I'd say that's because we live a short little human lifespan in which we can't see it all come to pass. But as Al Stewart once wrote, time goes slowly by in the provinces. That was me, not Morford. I don't think Morford would ever quote Al Stewart. I will and do. The vast majority of fears are unfounded. The dire threats to our lifeblood turn out to be whimpering clowns who only wanted a moment of attention because they're lonely and sad, just like everyone else. The good news is, the good news is still outweighing the bad. The good news is, if everything were as dire and hellbound as the Christian fundamentalist right, the ecomaniac left, and the libertarian nutball fringe say it is, we'd have blipped out 1,000 years ago in a puddle of whining bloodshed and severely sunburned shoulders. Isn't that reassuring? I have no idea. Who wants lip balm? And so, having read that, I thought, hey, Nancy's Yogurt. I've found somebody that's making my life better instead of worse, and doing it with, as far as I can tell, no evil involved. Not only is there no high fructose corn syrup in Nancy's Yogurt, there's no goddamn evil. And I'm up for not eating evil. So hence my little campaign, just to see if we can get 200 horn listeners to like Nancy's Yogurt. So there. Jeff has since... wow, Jeff. And Jeff may not even be able to get Nancy's Yogurt. Jeff's in Australia. Yeah, I gotta share something with you that Jeff wrote earlier today. Jeff's a new listener. You know, I think we've got a burgeoning Australian thing going on here. You know, one of these days, the first place that the horn is ever heard on terrestrial radio may not even be in the United States. There's nothing hardcore or serious about this, but I mean it. We may wind up being heard on some terrestrial radio station in some civilized country that doesn't get its panties all in a wad when some caller drops an innocent and inadvertent F-bomb on the air. God knows if that happened to me and I was on terrestrial radio in the United States, that's a $275,000 fine for me. You know, the guy who can't quite raise $2,000 a month. That's why we're on the Internet. But Jeff contacted me earlier today saying that he was that he was new to the show and loved it. And made some very trenchant thoughts. He said, one of the things that makes me very frustrated and sad and angry is the inherent unfairness of it all. As I wrote to Jason Leopold of truthout.org the other day, I'd love to contribute many dollars to lots of organizations, but the havoc wrought on global markets by the Bush crime family and their Wall Street friends affected me deeply, and I'm still reeling. But Jeff goes on and says, right now I'm obsessed with this oil volcano. And that, by the way, is the new word. Thank you, Jeff. The new word. It, you know, I've tried gusher. Gusher wasn't working for me. Spill is so out. Spill is where the oil is in something like a coffee cup and you turn the coffee cup. Oh, hell, I spilled the coffee. That's a spill. This isn't even the Exxon Valdez, which I guess you could consider to have been a giant toxic coffee cup. Spill implies a finite amount that pours out. This isn't that. There's so much oil down there as to consider it finite. It's finity. It's finitude. Is that a word? Just happens to be... It just... It, it's inconceivable in the scale of damage possible. And I'm still waiting for the latest on the top kill. I'm still waiting for the blow the bastard up plan myself. Oil volcano. You know, the last time I heard the word volcano, I was thinking in more pleasant terms because being as I am an adherent of the religion of the flying spaghetti monster, I know that when I do shuffle off this mortal coil, I will get strippers and a beer volcano. Speaking of beer, I didn't get any in Utah. And trust me when I say that there would have been a special satisfaction in quaffing a cold one in freaking Utah. But my God, the sense of humor the liberals out there have. There was a micro-brewed Utah beer for sale there at Snowbird called Polygamy Porter. Yes, Polygamy Porter. Why stop with just one? That's their marketing slogan for Polygamy Porter. Why stop with just one? Dear God, I'm sounding like Paul Harvey. I've got to stop this. But Jeff continues, right now I'm obsessed with this oil volcano. As usual, we weren't getting the whole story, at least not without great difficulty. A nuclear accident would be worse, I think, but not by much, especially if it starts up the Florida coast. Well, but then again, maybe that's what it'll take to get 2 million people in the Capitol Mall demanding a government that works for the average person and not just the Cheneys and blank fines and blanket ships and Bushes and their ilk. Bless his heart, Jeff says, I really admire you for what you're doing against mountaintop removal in that game. Another environmental disaster. I was hoping for the Mountaineers to win the NCAA because it would lift the state's collective spirit. Bless your heart, Jeff. And Jeff has seen the quote that I use on all of my emails from Kurt Vonnegut. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can barely hear his conscience at all. And he says, regarding the Vonnegut quote below, I consider my own consciousness and how it is affected by all the huge human-caused problems. If, since the stolen election of 2000, I had directed my energies, I could probably have earned 3 PhDs with all the words I've heard and read and written about the decline and fall of America. I have PTSD about it, I think. I don't want all that in my head. I'm a designer, an artist, a writer, a poet, an amateur astronomer, and longtime environmentalist. But I'm cursed with huge curiosity, and I can't stay away from politics and the economy. And I know exactly that of which Jeff speaks. A, I've walked away from doing evil. Not only do I not want to eat it, I don't want to do it. And I try consciously not to. But yeah, the curiosity will win out. The curiosity will get you sooner or later. So, but most importantly, no more spill, please. Calling this a spill is an insult to everything it's already killed and will kill and is killing. Whether it be some massive portion of the Earth's spirit itself, to the extent that you buy into that sort of thing, or every fish and every mammal, every reptile, every everything. And yeah, most importantly, because I'm just that way, every human being. I mean no false comparison here. I mean no comparison at all. But we did manage to have at least a minor grief orgy in this country over what happened at Upper Big Branch. But for the 11 people killed on the rig in the Gulf, it is as if they never existed. And all those families grieving. And And yes, we've had plenty of stories about the failure of the MMS and about snorting meth off of a toaster oven and sex between government and oil industry creeps. I use creeps to define both the government people and the industry people. I think it's appropriate. All of that. We've even heard about the... Hey, do you remember this? You remember shortly into the first Bush administration, right after the election was stolen? You remember that disaster off Hawaii? You remember when that United States Navy sub, for no reason that was immediately discernible, did that sudden surfacing thing like one of the last scenes from Hunt for Red October, where the nuclear submarine just goes poof, like a cork coming up from the bottom of the bathtub? That emergency surfacing thing where they just blow the tanks and poof. Remember how it turned out? After a few questions were asked, that the reason that happened was because some big-wig, loyal, bushy donors were aboard that sub, and they had given a sufficient amount of money that they were allowed to sit in the pilot's seat and push the button and make that happen because it was all sexy and cool and fun and wow! Only they did it when a Japanese trawler was underneath them, and they killed a bunch of people, a bunch of Japanese people. Remember that? Something very similar happened just before all hell broke loose on the Horizon rig. There were a bunch of oil company cronies there partying. Who knows? Maybe they were snorting meth. Or having sex with each other. Or snorting meth with each other and having sex with each other. Who knows? Well, Betsy, I do remember the story. It happened. I don't know what we do to raise the consciousness of the American people about those 11 dead workers, but by God, we ought to be trying. Because those were workers. 11 multimillionaire oil executives didn't die. 11 workers die. Just like at Upper Big Branch, Don Blankenship didn't die. Workers died. I suppose it's fair to humanity to suggest that it's awfully damn difficult to go that far backwards in the chronology of this disaster to try to make human those 11 workers in light of the fact that we have no idea how many more people's lives will be tormented and tortured. As a result of this spill. Oh, and by the way, just in case you're wondering, guess what? People who were working on the cleanup of the... Did I just say spill? Bad Bob. People who were working on cleaning up the oil volcano so far are already reporting that they're getting sick. Wait for this one to continue to develop. By the way, I think my phones were screwed up for a while, but we've got callers on the line, and I'm going to go straight away to them and hope they're still there. You're not. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Bob?
Yes.
Oh, hey there.
Hey, what's up?
I'm breathing in and out, so.
I think this is Koss.
Yes.
A little sore, a little stiff yet?
Oh, God. I feel like I'm at the bottom of baseball bats with my chest.
That sounds about like what I've heard from everybody else who's had that done.
Oh, man. That was kind of unpleasant.
Is that kind of when the nurse says, this may sting a little bit?
Yeah.
And it translates as look for a soft place to land?
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Thing is, I had no idea that the things were as near run as they were. You know, you've got three arteries feeding the heart, right?
Right.
Okay. The two on the right-hand side, the front and back, were over 80% occluded.
That will slow you down, Koss.
And the third one was over 90% occluded.
Eek.
And that's the main one, the front. Whee! It has been a journey.
I can well imagine. I saw the notice of it while I was gone that you were in. Seems like they turned you loose kind of quick, Cossack.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, let's let everybody know. Yeah, you had an emergency triple bypass.
Yeah. It was that or. You know, they wouldn't even let me go home after the angiogram. They said, but I'll come back on Wednesday. They said, you might not. Oh. You mean I might not, right? I think I'll stay here.
Yeah, I think I'll stay a while. I think you made the right choice.
God. Kind of does get your attention.
You know, if you pay attention to your body, it will tell you when it... And it's no comparison whatsoever, but it was a little scary while I was at 8,000 feet, Cossack, and my whole chest started going, ouch!
Oh, yeah.
I'd never been to 8,000 feet before. And so for you, a million times as much.
Well, what I didn't comprehend was a lot of those transitory chest pains I was getting were actually myocardial infarcts.
Eek.
Like I said,
you are being told by the relevant medical professionals that you're out of the woods.
More or less.
Do they have any idea that this is going to make the rest of your life somewhat better?
Well, at least I won't be collapsing in the grocery store. So, yeah.
That's a good thing.
And that has happened before. So don't want to do that again.
No, let's not.
Oh, man. But anyway, we're talking about the oil volcanoes going on out there.
Yep.
I mean, certainly there is an end to everything. There is no unlimited process. But we also have no earthly idea of what the end really is. How many billions of gallons of crap is that will finally escape? you know, still is a limited event, I would think. You know, and everything is limited. Jesus, you know. This is already several Exxon Valdez's worth in the Gulf.
Well, I think I did read somewhere that there was we'd cross the 100 million gallon barrier.
Oh yeah.
Right, because I've been sort of keeping track of it, Cossack, in terms of how long will it take for this oil volcano to reach the amount of toxic waste that was let loose by the Kingston, Tennessee coal ash disaster.
Exactly. For me, you know, this is the idiotic thing. You would imagine that the government would at least have some kind of assurance that if worse came to worse, you could turn the damn thing off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
at the very least, shouldn't you have to be able to demonstrate that you can shut the damn thing off?
Well, that's the thing. One of the other things that Jeff mentioned in his email to me earlier today was that he had read somewhere, and I can't recall off the top of my head the name of the author, was that was that human beings became clever before they became wise.
Yeah. Well,
there's actually anthropological proof of that, Cossack, because if you think about human evolution as we understand it, first you come up with, there's Homo, starts with Australopithecus afarensis, and maybe there's one before that now, Australopithecus afarensis being Lucy. And then you move forward and you get Homo habilis, the first of the Homo species. And Homo habilis is literally handy or clever man.
Yeah.
But what you get next, afarensis, Homo habilis is the second because Homo erectus was the first, then Homo habilis. And then the guy who comes up with fire is also Homo habilis, and that was pretty clever. But you still have to go another step or two up the process before you get to good old Homo sapiens, who, of course, as we all know, is thinking man. So in other words, we were clever before we were thinking. And as the quote infers, that's where all our trouble comes from. We were too clever by half before we were even thinking by one.
Exactly. And, you know, like I said, it's absolutely amazing how down here, for example, right up until the disaster, and, you know, and they're starting to see real effects in their pocketbooks, up until then it was all drill, baby, drill, I don't care. Drop a line 3 miles offshore. I don't care. Just give me that gas.
They weren't going to get in the first place and was actually as likely to be sold to Asia as anywhere else.
Exactly. And even so, you know, I kept on trying to explain to him, there is a reason why they did not give any more leases after Santa Barbara. You remember?
Yep.
That's why they said stop doing this shit, because it happened. You know, you can't do that.
That don't work so good.
Yeah, you can't assure me that, I mean, we keep forgetting, it's a mile down to the wellhead, a mile underwater, and it's another 5 miles down to where the bit is.
Right.
Yeah. There is no way in God's green earth that you can tell me you can operate that thing, because you can't shut it off. You can't turn it on and off, or you're not doing it right. Yeah, they didn't want all the blowout preventers. Costs too much money. Can't have that. Okay, but you can cause all the rest of us, all of society, to pay for your stupidity and greed. No, something is wrong here. Something is very, very wrong.
And the wrong thing, Cossack, is greed. Would you agree?
Oh, God, yes.
And so we wait to see if Top Kill works. Now, by Top Kill, do they mean that they're going to shut this well off forever?
No.
Or do they just mean they're going to try to buy time until BP can start pumping it again?
I would imagine the latter. But, I mean, this is so inane. Okay. You can't allow any system like that to work unless you have some kind of a emergency backup. You should have, you know, I'm a belt and suspenders type person, if you will. I believe in Murphy's Law.
Right.
I belong to that church.
Well, and see, that's what happens with the oil volcano. That's why the oil volcano happened, because they were all about the profit-driven part of let's get the oil, and sort of on the don't give a damn side of what could possibly go wrong.
Right. And I mean, you know,
but let's follow that for just a minute, Cossack, because who fostered in recent history, who fostered that laissez-faire attitude?
The conservatives, the Republicans,
Dick same, Cheney?
You know, the usual suspects.
Right. And again, while I am not a wholehearted, full-throated apologist for Barack Obama, I got to cut the guy a little slack on this. Yes, he made. Yes, some of the people were his people. But I go back and I say again what I have said before, Cossack, and that is, we must remember via Seymour Hersh, who has a proven track record and doesn't just casually get stuff wrong, and seldom get stuff wrong at all.
Yeah.
That he warned us that Dick Cheney had left burrowed moles inside the incoming Obama administration. Now, ask yourself, logically, where would an oil VP start in burrowing moles? Where would he have the greatest ability to hide those little sleeper cells? An oil VP. Come on.
Department of Energy? No.
Department of the Interior?
Wouldn't be there. Not like he bought down.
You know, the fact of the matter is, it's worth remembering that Bush's Interior Secretary for the first 4 years of his presidency and the next two of his second term was a woman by the name of Gail Norton.
Okay.
Remember Gail?
That detestable.
Yeah, and as soon as she stepped down, it's not like she went, her first trip was to the unemployment office.
Oh, no. She got a executive VP.
Shell.
Job with Shell.
Shell.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, I love this comment that's been shared along from Texas Betsy. It's a quote from some response page to a Top Kill story. Some person writing, I was all for that Top Kill gambit until I learned that it didn't mean a gangland hit against BP's upper management. Well, Cossack, I tell you what. That's from, it's from Mock Paper Scissors, the blog that she runs. I didn't get MPS on the first time through. Yeah, Mock Paper Scissors. MockPaperScissors.com. Cossack, you've been through a lot. I don't want to, I want you to go somewhere and hold the pillow against your chest and cough a little bit.
I'm running around with that sucker 24/7. Can't get away from my pillow.
No, you get real friendly with your pillow hugging.
Oh yeah, trust me.
Understood.
I know. I'll do.
Cossack, brother, take care, and I'm so glad we're all so glad to hear from you, and glad you're all right.
It's good to be back.
We love you, brother. Take care.
All right. Take care.
Bye now. And that's the Cossack after a harrowing adventure in heart surgery. And glad, those are no mere words, glad we are to know he's going to be okay. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra. Dr.
Hey,
Sandra. I'm sorry, Dr. Sandra.
Oh, no, it's not that. Oh, my God, it's just a B.A.
Oh, okay. Bachelor Sandra. You know, that's only calling you Bachelor Sandra is only going to make things worse for you. You realize that. You've already got a fan club and people lined up with proposals.
Oh, good Jesus. Well, I am single, too, but, you know, that's...
You're only making it worse for yourself.
Yeah, no, so that little ceremony was a bit special.
Yeah. Were you pointing?
It wasn't high enough to point, but I did shake a few hands.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Listen, so, I see you made it back, huh? Sounds like you had a interesting trip.
If John Candy and Steve Martin had been on either side of me in any of the planes, it would have been Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Sandra.
Oh, yeah, that's one of my favorite movies. Oh, my God.
I love the movie, but honest to God, it makes me cringe. You know what I mean? You know, they're funny, but still at the same time, you're going, ooh.
I just like the seatbelt part. I'm real juvenile that way.
That's okay. My entire family still lives for that scene in another great John Candy movie, Uncle Buck. Remember Uncle Buck?
Oh, shut, yeah.
When he gets pissed off at the principal for worrying that that Marcy is, or whatever, Maisie, that Maisie is she's a flitherdither. And John Candy gets so pissed off that when he leaves, he flips a quarter at the woman who's had this incredibly present mole on her face, to the point that when John Candy first introduces himself, he says, "Hi, I'm Buck Melanoma." I mean, and at the end, he flips her a quarter and says, "Here's a quarter, lady. Go downtown and find a rat to gnaw that thing off your face."
Oh, no, that Uncle Buck, that was funny, too. Those John Candy movies are great.
I miss him. I do. He's one of those, you know.
Yeah, no, real talented. Did he just, like, drop dead of a heart attack?
Oh, yeah. It was, you know, it's the John Belushi, John Candy, the Chris Farley syndrome.
Right, yeah.
Fat, funny, and dead.
Yeah, no, I know. And I know he was quite young, too, John Candy, when he croaked.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, no, his movies are still, they still hold up, I have to say. Hey, but, I really can't believe that volcano, what are you calling it now?
Oil volcano. One of the reasons why is, the Jeff pointed something out, and that is that there is some other evidence out there now that it's not just all coming out of the pipe. There's stuff leaching out of the seed floor around the pipe.
No, I heard that, you know, this whole process could unleash cracks from the seabed and, you know, just horrible. All of it sounds really horrific, and as we know, these people are winging it. I'm scared. I mean, there's no reason for you or I or anybody else who's reasonable to think that this is going to work, especially since the idiots themselves said only a 60-70% chance, which coming from liars means what? 10%?
20%?
You know, and then the whole idea that they could actually make it worse, I mean, the whole thing, it's just, I feel like it's a nightmare. Tell me if this is a nightmare, because I just read that the Bahamas are like, hello.
Oh, I'll lie to you, but it ain't no nightmare. This is real, and we're wide awake in it.
No, this kid is going to be in the Bahamas by the weekend.
Our good friend Jude up in the Great Northwest just sent that very thing along.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I was just like, you know, this is, they're talking about drilling some side. And see, once again, there's no reason for us to believe that that will work too, because they didn't have any plan even remotely filed away for this event.
No, because they were told it would be okay. And again, let me just throw something in here, Sandra, because like I said, I know a lot of people like want to come down and blame Obama on this. I got a reason. What I was just saying to Cossack about Cheney and his sleeper cell moles and stuff.
Yeah.
It makes sense to me that the first place he'd put him would be the first place he had greatest access to, namely the oil biz regulators.
And not only that, but didn't they do a conversion where they turned political appointees into bureaucrats, like in the beginning of the administration?
I seem to recall something along those lines. Well, let me just throw this out towards you. If I could, I may have lost it. Hold on. It'll come back.
But I mean, you know, the whole, and that's why when I was hearing about the endless backlog of Obama's appointees, I'm just thinking, you know, once again, you have to ask, why, where is the aggressiveness? This is your administration. It is within your power to get people in these important.
Okay, but Sandra, this is the place where you drop the dime on Obama, what you just raised exactly. Barack Obama appointed a U.S. attorney.
One.
Yeah, but he appointed a U.S. attorney, and that U.S. attorney was the U.S. attorney who was asked to investigate this thing. A month or so, 2 months ago.
Yeah, but apparently he hasn't. He's allowed to reappoint every sitting state's attorney like that. I mean, isn't that part of the executive branch?
True. Let me get to the fun part. So he appoints this guy. This is an Obama appointee. He's asked to investigate this slipshod business with how BP was going about all this crap. And the guy just says, well, there's nothing, you know, nothing to see here. These are not the droids you're looking for. Move along, you know. This appointee had come straight from the oil industry.
Well, so has Eric Holder.
Hello. Well, that's true. That's,
I mean, no, I just sort of, yeah, it's just really disturbing. But what I can't get past is you look at that, BP CEO, that freak. These people live in parallel universe, and when they decide to visit us, oh my God, it is so disturbing. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
These people are disgusting.
And that's why I ask, if we can't give the death penalty to BP, can we just give the death penalty to that well? Oh, and I know what it was I was going to say a minute ago. Sandra, do you remember the much vaunted missile defense system that the Bushies were so hell bent on that it turned out didn't work?
Yeah, just like Star Wars. Yeah.
Yeah. It turned out it could only hit another incoming missile if that incoming missile had a homing beacon attached to it.
Yeah, they did like three tests during his administration. They all cost nearly $200 million. Yeah, I remember that.
Right. Well, another story has come out in the last week that shows that even though the Obama administration has continued to be down with the program, the thing only works 20% of the time, and usually not in the rain. And this is the same thing. The reason I mention that is it's the same thing as saying we're going to drill a relief well. Now, how far away are you drilling this relief well? And you are, by definition, probably drilling it on a slant because you have to intercept the oil that's coming out of the bed and into that pipe.
Yeah, right. So I'm saying it has to be a slant. You know, obviously.
Right, and, And what are your, and I would say your odds of hitting that are less than the odds of one of those missile interceptors hitting the missile.
No, and listen, you're right about that, because I looked at the so-called designs that they've been, you know, they showed of the whole thing, and my God, the oil layer is how many thousands of feet below? I was just sort of gobsmacked. I'm like, you know what, this kind of engineering, it should not even be done. And obviously we know it shouldn't be, because they don't even know what the hell. I don't know. I don't know why I'm surprised, but, you know, you just can't wrap your head around the idea of people doing this. I guess it's just arrogance. I don't know what the hell it is. No.
Maybe you're overthinking. Maybe you're overthinking, Sandra. It isn't arrogance. It's greed.
Okay, yeah, well, no, it's just that we're able to do it, there's the oil, and we're just going to go with it. And in the meanwhile, we're going to shortchange any possible means for this to be maintained safely to save a few more dollars. Is that about right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll get back to my original question. Why in the world should we believe that this is going to even stop? In August, ever. I don't mean to say that.
Well, no. Why? I can't answer it because I have no faith in it. You know, that's why when I originally started talking about oil volcano, I got an email in from our buddy Kate on the desert, who said, no, that's not good enough either. You have to talk about this in terms of an extinction event.
Well,
a single drop of oil can kill a fish. How many drops of oil are there?
Yeah, no, I mean, because I was sort of thinking, well, you know, just sort of following this, I mean, I was thinking that, you know, Malloy, you know, is a bit over the top, but...
No, he ain't.
Maybe he's not, you know, with the extinction event. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, oh, no. But then, I'm just sort of thinking about what we're just talking about, and there is no reason for us to think anything else, but this is something really frightening that's happening, because no one knows what the hell they're doing. I got to hear about Obama freaking out and saying, plug the damn hole. I bet he is.
Is, he is quoted as having said that a month ago.
Well, no. I'm like, you know, I don't even know what kind of spin they're doing, because all we have to do is keep looking at that gusher. You see, the spin, as it keeps going, the spin isn't going to work. And
the longer it goes on. You remember when right wing Republicans and some Democrats during the Clinton Lewinsky scandal kept talking about drip, 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 how President Clinton had to just come clean about it all.
Yeah.
All at once. Do it all at once. This drip, drip, drip is killing us.
Yeah.
Well, the same thing applies to the Obama administration, Sandra. Right now, it's hard to call 200,000 barrels a day or whatever it is, drip, drip, drip. But that's what it is to the Obama administration,
well,
because every day it goes on, it gets to be a little more his. Even if it wasn't to begin with, even if it's Cheney's Chernobyl, it gets to be a little more his every day.
Well, and also, you know, he, once again, he doesn't seem to be making use of the tools of the executive, because I'm sorry, I know he went to the mining disaster, but where was his ass for them people who had a memorial the other day? I'm sorry.
Not there. They did. Yeah. You know, they got a mention somewhere along the way, but not there.
No, but you understand what I'm saying? It's like those are easy. That's an easy one. Explaining to the American people why a corporation is in charge of it is less easy.
Okay,
but
wait, Sandra, you're going to hate me for this. You are so going to hate me for this. I'll tell you why he wasn't at the memorial service for those 11. And it makes me sick to say it, because I hate to view things in political terms like this.
Well, I know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
Barack Obama didn't just get beaten by John McCain in this state. Barack Obama had his ass thrashed off in the Democratic primary. I mean, not even close. And that included that 21% of voters in the Democratic primary, and remember, we have closed primaries here, who said, I just don't think America is ready for a nigra in the White House. That is why he came to Beckley. Because if you'll recall, I said early on that, there's no sense in him coming here because there's a whole lot of whitey in West Virginia don't want nothing to do with him and still doesn't. But he was making a calculated, probably Rahm Emanuel-driven political attempt to secure West Virginia in November of 2012. And that, too, is why he said during the eulogy, America needs to remember that coal keeps the lights on.
Oh, dear God, that's right.
Now, and am I crazy and paranoid? Maybe. I don't think so. Does that sound like a viable reason for why he was in West Virginia at that memorial, but not the other?
Well, and also, I was also thinking that, well, you also didn't have, there's no place for the family members and wives to sort of hang out like there was for the mining accident. Out of sight, out of mind, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, the Upper Big Branch mine is wrecked underneath. We never saw that. But you know what? That drilling rig is sunk. No matter how many times they show us the horrifying pictures of that thing engulfed in flames, it's sunk. It's out of sight.
Right. And there's really no place for the family members or anyone else to sort of gather, to mobilize, per se, you know?
Yeah. And then and the way, you know, the way those survivors were treated, you can't get off the boat till you've signed your promise to shut them up.
Yeah, no, I can't even believe it. I mean, yeah, I can't believe it, but it's so gross.
It's disgusting. So, but, you know, I think that's the most rational answer we're liable to come up with for why some things have been the way they are.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just, you know, I really don't see an end to it. And by August, I mean, what is it going to all be looking like?
Well, if it's true that according as this Nassau Guardian from the Bahamas, the worst natural disaster to hit the Gulf Coast is likely to reach local coastlines by the weekend, according to Chief Climatological Officer Michael Stubbs, who said a shift in wind patterns is expected to propel the oil slick toward the Bahamas. As it stands now, the wind is not supporting movement out of the Gulf. It's keeping the oil particles that are floating along the surface in the Gulf of Mexico. However, as Friday approaches, we see the weather pattern changing, and what would happen then is the winds in the area would be flowing clockwise, making it possible for oil floating on the surface to make it a notorious loop current. So once the particles move into loop current, the chances are higher for it to reach our area. And it's kind of nice that the Nassau Guardian Online doesn't say spill. It says the worst natural disaster to hit the Gulf Coast. That's screwy, too.
Yeah, I mean, but
There ain't nothing natural about it, Sandra.
No, and it's turning into, you know, a worldwide event.
Yeah, it is.
And did you see James Carville? God, that's crazy.
Kate wrote me earlier saying, you got to hear this, you got to hear this, and I haven't found it yet. So, no, I didn't hear it. Tell me.
I don't know. It's just he was, you know, basically, you know, begging or demanding or whatever for Obama to take this situation over. And he described, you know, you need to get destroyers, you know, the Navy, whatever, all ships down here, you know, we're dying down here. I mean, just was sort of hella frustrated and, you know, quite disturbing. It's like, you know what I mean? Just sort of the remnants of that man who lost his mother during Katrina. Remember that outburst?
Yeah, I do.
And it's just kind of, you know, just sort of hopeless and then really just wondering where is the government. And this whole song and dance about them, oh, we can't do it because we don't have the equipment, just says so much. It's like, good Jesus. You know, how emasculated is the government? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How hollowed out is it, really? It's just incredible.
It obviously doesn't. And again, I guess if some little right winger was off in a corner somewhere, listening to the radio with one hand and doing something else with another, he'd be saying, "Look at that! All he can do is blame Bush." I mean, here we are, 2 years later, he's still blaming Bush. Well, it's because it's Bush's fault, for Christ's sakes.
Well, 30 years of, you know, I just think it just is a culmination of neoliberalism, you know.
Yeah.
Full effect.
Well, exactly. This is what you get from the likes of Grover Norquist. Remember, this is a guy who said he wanted government small enough to drown in the bathtub. Well, if a government's small enough to drown in a bathtub, Sandra, it's small enough to be absolutely incapable of handling most anything. So now Grover Norquist's bathtub is half empty, and the half that isn't has filthy freaking oil in it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just sort of, what is that freak, Haley Barber? Is he still talking about come on down, enjoy our beaches?
I saw that he said it. I didn't see that he rescinded it.
Because, you know, I mean, you can't really get the full effect unless you're there. But it looks to be horrific. I mean, what washed up on the marshes in Louisiana? My God, that wasn't balls. That was like a full-on wave.
Yes.
It was horrible.
Yes.
And they said that once that happens, that's kind of it? Is that true?
Yeah, because when you get a wash like that, it's going to sink into the sand.
And so you can't remove it. But my thing is, you know, the Keys, I'm sorry, that's just coral. What the hell's going to happen to that?
Dead.
I don't mean to laugh. I'm just sort of flabbergasted because, wow. Okay, so let's say, you know, I'm assuming I'll talk to you before November, but let's just project. You know what? God, I can't imagine November, Bob.
I'm hoping it's not going to be as bad as we think it is. One of the things that our buddy Tosh pointed out while I was gone was right. That with all the talk about Rand Paul, both Democratic candidates for that Senate seat got more votes than he did.
Oh, no, I mean just the state of the spill.
Oh, okay. I misread you. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just thinking about if it's still gushing in November. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm just stuck on that because by the end of this week, this cap thing will have worked and, you know, we'll be having a sigh of relief or something. But
well, you'd like to hope so, but if it's still going in November, I don't think the Democrats would be wrong in beginning to point out some of the common sense stuff that we've been talking about here. This is what you have when you buy into a political philosophy that says government is bad and government that regulates out of control industry is bad, and government simply says, well, they'll do the best they can. And you're right. It's not just 8 years of Bush. It's 8 years of Reagan. It's 4 years of Daddy Bush.
And Clinton, sorry.
Yeah.
Right up in it.
Clinton's got his hands in it, too.
I mean, you know, it's just sort of, yeah, and it's just decade upon decade of this sort of magic thinking, the magic of the marketplace, the sort of voluntary, you know, regulating yourself, these rapacious, extractive industries. Why the hell would you regulate yourself if you can just go all at it? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
It's just, you know, it's like BS that people even have convinced themselves that these corporations would operate, what, nicely? Or it's in your best interest not to destroy the environment? Why? Every country now is a profit center because they're multinationals. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's why all these forms of voluntary regulation and voluntary compliance, I think, is the official term. It is. It's magical thinking, and I use that phrase, and as I know you do, in its clinical sense. It is what people with broken brains engage in. And you know what? I will go so far as to speculate from a psychological standpoint, and I will defer to Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner for this as well. Greed that overcomes every other human sensibility within the moral and ethical framework, greed can cause broken brains as well.
Well, no, and especially when there's no countervailing power, like a community, to work against it. You see what I mean? They've broken everything down to the individual, and when your life is in hell, it's your fault-ism, that when this kind of stuff does pop up, we're left doing what we're doing now, wringing our hands and wondering what the F.
And that's the sickening part.
And it's disgusting.
That's what we're left to do. There's not a damn... I mean, you know, we're doing all we can to be public advocates for doing the right thing.
No, but we're not all islands. See, that whole dogma is just bullshit because God knows we need a community to deal with a crisis like this. Good God. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're supposed to rely on this corporation to take care of it at this point.
You know, we had that long list of things that the framers wrote, you know, about governments being instituted among men, blah, 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 blah. And this is that. A government, as you well know, is supposed to act in the best interests of its citizenry, especially when we're talking about social contract government as opposed to freaking monarchies.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, you cannot have the social contract without the participation of the people. Otherwise, it's neo-feudalism, but I fear that's what we're sort of looking at. I mean, if all we can do is spectate and hope for the best, you know, we got troubles, big problems. You know, where the president is like just muttering, plug the damn hole, I'm like, dude.
Yeah, that's where you get on your horse, Andrew Jackson style, so to speak, and you ride down there and say, I'm not leaving. We will set up a White House command unit here. I am not leaving until somebody comes to me and says, we have not only plugged it, we have plugged it by destroying it.
Well, yeah.
And BP can never get another cent out of it.
No, I mean, they're trying to claim now that, they weren't planning on, you know, using that well again. I've read that comment. But I'm thinking, well, if that was the case, why didn't you collapse the floor on top of it by now? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know anything about it. Trust me, I know nothing about engineering, so I'm just talking out my ass. But I'm like, all they're doing seems to be trying to preserve the profit center, to me. And
that
maybe now
sounds...
they're talking about killing it off, because it's been such a dismal failure on their part, but wow.
Yeah, I know.
And anyway, I mean, you know, I can't even have a normal conversation about this because I'm so, like I said, I'm just gobsmacked. It's really, I've never, you know, you think about, oh, what you would see in your lifetime. Come on now. This is just, I don't know.
I know. I'm as gobsmacked as you are.
You know,
I mean, I wish I had tons of engineering knowledge and I could say, do this, 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 and this. I wish I had a deeper understanding of the science so that I could say with more precision, because I'm not wrong, so that I could say with more precision, more precise knowledge, why it is that these BP executives should get the Mussolini Milan treatment.
But you know what? Why is it that Brazil and Norway, I read that they already have slanted wells drilled. Did you know that?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just like, huh? You know, you hear about what these countries have in place for this inevitability, and you're like, you're looking at us.
But those are countries that believe that government has a vital and viable role to play within the grand structure of societal safety, of societal the well-being, and within the structure of those who would make business off of their people's asses.
Well, you need another thing, Ali, I'll let you go, but another thing you should keep in mind about this, which of course I have to think of, is what freaking financial derivative has been designed to capitalize on this?
You're just little Sandra Sunshine, aren't you?
Hey, you know what? It's a joke. This is my week to stare, you know, because I'm trying to recover from what I just went through, you know, my little whatever. But it's just too much, you know? I mean, I was half glad you weren't on. I'm like, oh, I'll just ignore everything, you know?
Oh, I get a break. Oh, thanks. Thanks. Remind me to put that on the Bob Kincaid ad reel.
Well, you know, that isn't, yeah, I mean, it came out wrong, but you know what I mean.
No, I do know what you mean, because see what happens to me on this end is that whenever I know I'm going to be gone for a few days, all kinds of hell breaks loose.
Well, that's the thing. I also was thinking, damn, you know, shit is nonstop, and, you know, I hope Bob's having a good time.
And guess what? I had a great time once I got there, the breathing part notwithstanding. Wonderful people. I just love the people I met. But the getting there? Oh, hell no.
Traveling is so horrific nowadays. I don't, yeah, everybody I talk to.
Right, yeah, I'm not, you know how bad I am at math on the fly, Sandra. But I looked at that aircraft. Let's put it, okay, let me describe the biggest aircraft I was on. It was a Boeing 767 flying from Atlanta to New York specifically to drop off the hillbilly so it could go on to Ghana. I think. Maybe it was scheduled anyway, and they just wedged me in.
No.
Okay. It had a legitimate first-class section with nice, wide, comfortable seats. Then you moved into the second section, and it was two seats by either window and an aisle down the center with four seats.
Yeah.
Which were roughly two-thirds the size of a human being each.
No, it's terrible.
Now, see,
where were you sitting?
I was sitting in a window seat that didn't have a window by it because I was crammed right up on top of the bulkhead in steerage.
Oh, God.
You know, I was the Leonardo DiCaprio guy that was down there dancing by the propeller shaft in Titanic.
Wow.
Only I'm not as cute as Leonardo. But anyway, so I know that once upon a time, that plane was designed for wider seats, maybe three seats in the center section instead of four or five, back there in steerage that they call coach, and it wasn't a hateful, miserable experience. By the same token, I was also on a Boeing 737 that was one center aisle and three seats on either side, again, two-thirds the size of a real human being. And I know that that, too, was once designed with two seats instead of three. But they went in and they refurbed to cram in those extra seats, to get those extra dollars. And if I'd love for some, okay, let's put it this way. My flight was $600. The plane carried 240 people.
Right.
Divide that $600, or multiply that $600 times those 240 people, then take out however many seats, take out a third of the seats, and come back and tell me how much that plane ticket is and see if I wouldn't still be willing to pay it. I mean, I didn't pay it, but you get my meaning.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be hateful and miserable to travel.
No, but I mean, between what you just described and the whole security apparatus, I mean, it really is.
Oh, Jesus, Sandra, I didn't get to that.
Oh, God.
Coming,
even internal, it's horrible.
Leaving Utah, going to Cincinnati, for the first time, I had to go through the X-ray full body scanner.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that was a whole new thing.
I thought that was just for international.
Oh, no. No, we're testing it on the home folks first.
Right, but privacy much?
Not so much. Because you have to take off shoes. You have to take off belt. Anything that's metal has to come off. I'm surprised I didn't have to drop trowel because it had a metal button.
Oh, no.
But you walk into the booth, and there's two little yellow outlines of footprints and a chart on the wall that shows. And the weird thing is the chart on the wall is right in front of where they're X-raying you. So, anyway. But there's a chart on the wall and showing you where to put your hands. And what it winds up being, Sandra, is you walk in,
Hello? You
plant your feet on the ground in the little yellow feet.
Oh, no.
And then you put your hands over your head and you do Vogue, Vogue, Vogue. And that's what it looks like. Oh, I think that one may have gotten to Sandra. No, seriously, Vogue. That or you put two fingers in front of your eyes and you're doing, Pulp Fiction. Jesus. It's just embarrassing that we're that terrified as a people. So I've been going at this for a while, and my voice is not at its strongest, but it's holding up reasonably well, I think, under the circumstances. Rick Goodner, horn psychotherapist, knows a little bit about altitude sickness and has advised me and told me, yeah, you sound like you're at least getting well again. I'm going to do something right now. I'm going to kill a few minutes with it because I think it deserves to be done. You may remember a few nights ago, did I play this already? No, I didn't play this already. I encourage you to go and buy this track just to have it handy for the next time something goes to crap in the oil industry. A couple of weeks ago, I played you from many years back, Steve Forbert's The Oil Song. And I said, wow. Got to wonder why he hasn't updated it to now. And lo and behold, our pop culture correspondent, David from Maine, sent me a link, and darned if Steve Forbert, one of my favorite musicians, hasn't updated The Oil Song for 2010. This takes a few minutes. The old one was not a short song. It was 8 minutes. But since he recorded it, a lot more crap has gone down, and it's gone up to 13 minutes, and I think, given the nature of the conversation we've been having this evening, I think it is more than warranted that we take a little break, let me refresh my throat, you light up the phone lines for the rest of the program, and we'll come back at it. This is The Oil Song, 2010, from the incredible Steve Forbert. You can buy the song at steveforbert.bandcamp.com.
Cried the men who were there, and she passed up the dock on the wide Delaware. Then the ship ran aground and the oil got away, and they did not report the big spill on that day. It was hundreds of thousands of gallons galore, stretching 32 miles down the Delaware shore. There were geese in the marshes out looking for food. They got stuck where they stood in the oncoming crew. And it's oil, oil, drifting to the sea. And it's oil, and it's oil, tall right at the station. You can get it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. In the well-charted waters of the Nantucket Shoals was a ship on the ground full of oil, we were told. In a week's worth of rough winter weather and waves, the boat started cracking and it could not be saved. It was 7.6 million gallons this time. Consider the danger and think of the crime. As it poured out of slick, stretching into the tide, over 100 miles it came deep, it came wide. It was oil, it was oil. You can get it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. One of these ships was the Olympic Games. The Argo Merchant was the other one's name. It's sad, but it's true. Things got worse for the seas. Along came a craft called a Moco Cadiz. A Moco Cadiz between England and France. Big super tanker out taking a chance with his 100,000 black tons of the slag. A Moco Cadiz spilled the most of all time. People, oil, oil, creeping in the sea. There was oil, oil. Don't buy it at the station. You can get it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be.
Now for free.
come on down to the shoreline where the water used to move. They're banning those single hulled tankers we hear, phasing them out in the next several years. And the one called the Prestige won't be jumped in that heap. It stalled off of Spain and it sank down the deep. 1 million gallons of the fuel reached the beach. 19 more sank in some tanks that weren't breached. If air's trapped inside them, they'll burst any day. If not, they'll just sit there to rust and decay till it's all out.
Deep water rig called Horizon went down.
No way to seal off its pipe has been found. So South Louisianans all wait for to see just what the landfall of this spill will be. People, oil, and it's oil creeping in the sea. And it's oil, and it's oil. Don't buy it at the station. You can get it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Right.
Wow. I'm glad I did that. Just wow. Again, the website, Steve Forbert, Steveforbert, dot Bandcamp, Bandcamp, dot com. Look for the Oil Song 2010. The whole thing is a five-tracked album, including that as well as the old Oil song live. And three other tracks. You can get the whole thing for $5. Do Steve Forbert a favor. Own that. Own it. Because, you know, when we broadcast a song, it's not at CD quality, it's not in stereo, and it's no threat to sales. Buy this if you are inclined to think that it might be handy for you sometime, and I'm guessing it's going to be. You know, if I could, right now, I would get back on a plane with this MP3 in my possession on a thumb drive. And if I could get a meeting with Barack Obama, I'd say, let's just plug this in and give me 13 minutes of your life, Mr. President. Listen to this. This is the single best chronology of the horror that is the fossil fuels industry's impact on the American people and the world. Listen to this, Mr. President. Pay attention. Nobody else is going to give it to you in this compact little truthful nugget. Hear this and then do something. Be the president you know you can be. Be the president you want to be. Be a president of the people, by the people, and for the people. And stop saying, plug the well. And go down there and tell them, it's going to, by God, happen. If you have to start kicking asses until you find someone who can and will do it. Maybe that seems simple. Maybe that's just hillbilly talk. But by God, wouldn't you be refreshed to hear something like that? To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm holding up. I made it through the show.
I'm glad you had a safe trip back. And let me say a few things, if I may, please.
Sure do.
First, I want to wish your friend Cossack the very best in this time of healing. May this pass quickly.
Thank you, Jim. You've got a good soul.
I do. I try to. But I want to say a few things about what's been going on here. Number one, the president has been remiss in his duties. He needs to be down there, and I'm not going to populate this conversation with expletives or obliteratives, okay? But he needs to be down there with every member of the armed force that he can summon, every swinging dick, as they say in the military. I don't care if they have push brooms, Hoover vacs, or whatever. And number two, he needs to get rid of some of these people that have been put into the EPA. Now, some of these people in the EPA have been able to transition from political appointments into civil service appointments. And they do this by a mechanism under Title V that is known as the a RANSPEC appointment. That's how you get people to continue certain policies, even when a new person is in the White House. And the Coast Guard, commander of the Coast Guard, just finishes up his tour of duty. He's done nothing. They have extended his tour of duty for whatever reason. And I say, as far as he's concerned, go, go, in the name of God, go, for any good that you have been doing. And what they need to do, and I'm no engineer, but the only other thing they can do is to ram a Torpex torpedo or something of equal magnitude into that hole as far as they can get it, blow it up, and seal it.
That, and where it could never be accessed again.
Exactly. I mean, this.
Like I said before, if we cannot impose the death penalty on BP, let's at least impose it on their damnable well.
When you have a wound, how do you stop the bleeding? You have to cauterize it.
Hear, hear.
Topical means on it sometimes. These things, arteries and stuff, sometimes have to be cauterized. And that's the only way I can see that this could be done. And as far as I'm concerned, and I'll be perfectly frank with you. I would have preferred Hillary Clinton to be in the White House, not Barack Obama. I voted for him in the general election. But it's this type of thing of trying to please this person and please that person and dancing around the middle like some Governor LePetitmaine in Blazing Saddles. And that's the role that he's playing right now. He needs to get off his ass and get down there and set up a command post and exercise his authority and have some fucking balls.
Amen. Amen. You know, and you, oh my God, your reference to Governor LePetitmaine. Work, 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 work. Hello, boys, did you miss me?
And if he can't do it, let him resign and let him get Biden in there, somebody who can.
Okay, Jim, here's my only question.
This is his problem. You know, Bob, I know we can blame Bush and all the people back to whomever, but this is like having a case of the clap. You don't worry about where the hell you got it. You do something about it, and you get rid of it.
That is the absolute truth, Jim. What I've been trying to say with the Bushies and stuff is that this was a problem long in the making, but it is Barack Obama's. It's not George Bush can't come solve it, even if he would.
The buck stops at his desk, and a lot of these EPA.
And maybe it is time for Obama to go and stare at the paintings in the White House or something, have a little conversation with Harry Truman, and, yeah, understand what that means. The buck stops here.
And a lot of these EPA officials have been doing sweetheart deals, getting football tickets from these oil companies and stuff like that. And I put the blame on them just as much as I do anybody else. But the time for Barack to stare at the planes of the paintings of the White House are over. Get your ass down there, Mr. President, and do what we put you in there for, or get the hell out of 16th Pennsylvania Avenue, and let's find somebody who will. I am very angry.
I can tell. You do not engage this anger lightly or without reflection.
And I don't try to monopolize your program either.
No, you don't.
I have to say, and I get off there, because I know there are other people who want to have their say. I really do. But, by God, this is going to be another disaster that is going to have untold effects. And they need to blow that son of a bitch up, and they need to seal it, and they need to implement any types of safety mechanisms to prevent this from happening again instead of this bullshit rhetoric. I'm aware. Well, hell, we know you're aware. If you're not aware, you're an idiot.
Well, you know, you might find this interesting, Jim. Our buddy Glenn in the UK just sent something along from that's being put about by an Egyptian engineer. And it's quite fascinating. He says, a sure way to cap the BP wild well without even cutting the riser pipe is by using a thermite bomb consisting of a thermite charge, a mixture of aluminum powder and iron 3 oxide powder with a ratio of 1 to 3 by weight plus detonator, wired or wireless, filling the inside of a hollow bell-shaped iron casing big enough to engulf the top of the blowout preventer. It may also have a side slot to let the riser pipe pass through. Now lower the bell-shaped thermite bomb into the water by an iron chain exactly onto the blowout preventer and detonate the thermite inside the bell-shaped iron casing. The thermite will burn fast at very high...
go down and not be expended up and wasted. Like I say, a Torpex torpedo could do this, Bob. I mean, I've been around these things, and I know what they can do.
Yeah, he says the thermite will burn fast at a very high temperature, causing the bell-shaped iron casing enveloping the thermite charge, which weighs several tons, to melt down. The molten iron will flow down and cover the top of the blowout preventer, instantly plugging and killing the wild well.
Effectively cauterization, correct?
Correct. And see, that's where we reach the problem. The oil industry, whether we, and you know, I think we say these things, Jim, but we don't fully have the ability to let them have life within our ability to reason. The oil industry has this country by the nuts. All right? And even the President of the United States has his in their grip. It's sad, well, but it's true. And it may take it. We need somebody in there who is willing to risk his own balls.
Well, he's going to fall anyway. And in November, it's going to be a massacre. And the next presidential election, this is going to be used against him. I mean, he's just about as effective in this as Nicholas II was in World War I by going up near the headquarters to be near his troops. Damn it, let him get down there and let him do something. I'm not trying to repeat myself.
No, you're not. You're not. You know, and the thing is, you're getting responses here. I just got an email from our dear pal Maura. Up in New Jersey, she says, that all I can say is, heck of a job, Kenny Salazar. Remember Heck of a Job Brownie?
Right.
And horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, writing from down in Texas, says, kiss Jim on the nose for me, with a big smiley face.
But like I say, he needs to get in the military what we call every swinging dick down there.
Yep.
I don't give a shit what they are.
But you know what we got instead? Did you catch this? Now, he
I know
can't,
what they have down there. They've got nothing.
He can't send the military in. He can't take... I mean, there's another plan out there that's worked before in the Arabian Sea where they're pumping crap out with tankers and getting it away. You know, with a whole armada of tankers. We're not doing that either. We're waiting for another BP, hokum, bogus, might work, might not work plan to work.
They don't know any more than I do.
But here's the absolute insult, Jim. We don't have he can't get folks down there, but what did he do? He's sending 1,200 National Guardsmen to help secure the Mexican border. Now, I heard those as separate stories last night, but when I heard the Arizona separate, that, you know, this godforsaken land that has completely given itself over to hatred and racism and bigotry, and he's going to further that by sending United States Federalized National Guard troops.
Well, that's a complete
to secure the border while this hell of an oil volcano is continuing to gush. There are a lot of moments that I struggle to remain clothed and in the house with hair on top of my head. Because I heard that last night, Jim, and I was fit to run naked in the yard tearing at my hair.
Well, I'm sure you were. But, you know, Austin, truly, this reminds me of that scene from Nicholas Alexander when his mother came to see him in the front. And he kept saying, Mama, Mama. And she finally says, Nicholas, what the hell can you do? And this is a disaster of the first magnitude.
I think the phrase that is being bandied about is extinction event.
Exactly. I mean, this is beyond politics, and it's beyond the blame game. But like I say, after this, then he can ferret out some of those ramspec appointments and these EPA people who have been playing kiss and tell with the oil industry, and try to get somebody in there who will implement an effective strategy to have a decent and effective form of government. So this did not happen again.
Yeah, after this is all over, there's a four-phase process that needs to be undergone. Five-step. Investigate. Indict.
Absolutely.
Prosecute. Convict. Imprison.
Well, every one of those bastards who had anything to do with this into that Supermax with Ted Kaczynski.
But the problem is, again, you've seen the blame game where BP says it's the Transocean or whoever's the Swiss company's fault, and they say no, it's Halliburton's fault, and Halliburton says no, it's BP's fault.
Oh yeah,
right. And I'm sure you may have seen the testimony that Don Blankenship gave in front of the Senate not too long back.
I don't want you to think about that man. That, oh God, it's that's horrible.
Well, and that's the thing. That just by extension, each one of those three is trying to throw the other two under the bus. And at the same time, Don Blankenship is trying to throw Patriot Coal, which was the Shell company running Upper Big Branch, under the bus. And the whole point is that the actual people who are morally, legally, ethically responsible for all this will not see a goddamn day in prison. And I'm not yelling at you, Jim, just like you're not yelling at me. I think we,
you're right, and I'm sorry I raised my voice.
No, I'm sorry I'm raising it at you. But I'm
sorry,
not.
I said the words I did. Normally, you know me, I don't speak that way. And I really don't care to hear people who do. Because I've heard enough of it all my life. I have better education and training that I don't have to use it. But sometimes you simply have to get down and dirty. You know what I'm saying?
I do. And you know what? Jack is writing in from Shreveport, and, you know, he should know from whence he speaks, being a Louisianan. And he says, maybe we could put Tony Haywood's butt in jail and classify him as an enemy combatant so he could sit there indefinitely until everything is cleaned up. Because you know what? He is an enemy combatant, Jim. We had the interview with Lieutenant Colonel Barry Wingard and Lieutenant Commander Kevin Bogucki on a week or so ago, and they talked about what's being done to men who are clearly, admittedly innocent, who have sat for seven long goddamn years in Guantanamo Bay and to this day cannot see freedom, even though they are innocent. Tony Haywood is guilty as sin itself. He's the one who needs to be in an orange suit in Guantanamo being held indefinitely so that he cannot harm the United States. Those goat herders never did.
Well, like I say, I hope they follow the advice of the Egyptian engineer and they cauterize this wound, and I hope they never open it again. And I hope that they will apply the same type of safety measures that the other countries have employed to prevent something like this from happening again. And like I say, the people who are guilty, whether it's the EPA officials who made sweetheart deals and got football tickets from these oil companies, they need to be ferreted out, found out, and put in away so they cannot harm anybody again.
You are really striking a chord with people, Jim. This just rolled in from George. He said, unfortunately, while I can't blame Obama for the spill having occurred, his seeming lack of any decisive action is playing right into the hands of the pig-licking horde. James Carville called him on it the other day, and I think he was correct. Even if Obama doesn't actually do anything, he needs to look like he's directly involved and fully engaged. At some point, this becomes Obama's Katrina. That point may have already happened already. Looks like the venerable Chinese curse, you know, may you live in interesting times, is in full swing.
Truly, Obama needs to be physically present down there. They need to have a Louisiana White House, and he needs to be on the scene. He needs to be down there getting his hands dirty or seeing that the proper people who can do something about this do. And I don't care where Robert Ballard is working now, whether it's at Woods Hole or whether he's teaching now, they need to employ his services and other people who are used and accustomed to dealing with stuff at this depth. Working in conjunctions, we can solve this problem. But if they dicked along and dicked along for how long has it been? A month and a half?
Yeah. Yeah. If you count in the shenanigans going on before, longer than that. Longer than that, Jim.
Oh, this is just awful. It's just awful. And I cannot, well, I appreciate the time you spent. And like I say, I apologize for raising my voice and I apologize for my bad language.
No need to do either one, Jim. You are a man of grace, and they would not come out were they not warranted.
Thank you, sir. You have a good evening.
You take care, Jim.
Back, and like I say, my best regards to Cossack. God bless him.
I know he heard you. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye now. Jim with a whole bunch of truth tonight. Just a reminder, I got a couple more phone calls I'm going to try to get. But this cannot be left unmentioned. Our good friend Ken Ward, the author of the Cold Tattoo blog at WVGazette.com, had a regular news story in the Charleston Gazette today that sent shivers down my spine. As you know, there is an investigation underway as to why Upper Big Branch happened. It's being conducted by the Mine Safety and Health Administration. It is closed to any observers. There is no transparency whatsoever. And testimony before this commission is strictly voluntary. Knowing that, hear these words. Half of the Massey Energy employees who have so far been asked for information about the Upper Big Branch mine disaster have not shown up for scheduled interviews, government investigators confirmed Wednesday. The no-shows could hamper efforts to pinpoint the causes of the worst U.S. coal mining disaster in 40 years, officials said. The federal regulators can't subpoena witnesses without opening the interviews into a public hearing setting, something the Obama administration has refused to do. And so far, state investigators have hesitated to use their separate power to force witnesses to appear for the closed-door interviews. Now, you know full well that the last time the UMWA tried to organize Upper Big Branch, and this is known, this isn't speculated upon, it's fact, it's established. Don Blankenship went down into the hole and said, now, boys, you vote to let that union in. I'm closing down the mine. Do you think for an instant Don Blankenship wouldn't do the same thing about participating in this investigation? Now, son, you've been with us for a while now, and you've been a good employee. I'd sure hate for you to be one of the ones that we have to lay off. Anybody remember the end? Anybody remember the end of the Untouchables movie? Yeah. And since the MSHA can't subpoena witnesses, there's no crime committed by tampering with them. Delightful, ain't it? Thanks, Ken Ward, for getting that out there. Let's roll on, see if folks are still here. You're not. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, is this Bob?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, hey, listen, I'm a little nervous with being on the radio, so if I stumble, you can help me out a little bit, all right?
Okay, sure. Who have I got?
Okay. My name's Tony Starson. I'm calling from Las Vegas.
Okay.
I found you on the Internet, thank goodness, and keep speaking truth to power, because I can't find anybody out here that expresses things the way you do. If I could say a few things, what you said about, I don't know how much of a delay you are on delay, because it's a 2 or 3 hour time difference.
No, you're live.
Okay, I'm sorry about that, I didn't know. When you talked about the prisoners in Guantanamo, I'm Muslim, and you're absolutely right what you said, how these guys are in prison, and they haven't been charged with anything, and nobody really knows what they did. But BP and Blankenship, these guys are running roughshod over everything, and nobody does anything to them.
Absolutely. And the thing is, with the guys in Guantanamo, in some cases, the federal government itself has admitted, not only we don't know what they did, the government has admitted they did nothing.
Yeah, I know that, because I really follow. I listen to you, I listen to Mike, I listen to Stephanie, I listen to Randy. So I'm really, some people say I'm like a news junkie, but I follow a lot of stuff. And I got to tell you, if I could say a few things, I voted for Obama, but like you said, I'm really disappointed in him. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what's taking him so long. The Republicans are just used. They're going to put this away, and they're going to hang on to it, and they're going to drop bombs when it comes to re-elections. This guy had to, but he won by a landslide. Say what you want.